From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, protesters come to Albany calling for a ban on hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. Our political observer will share his thoughts on a new poll that shows New Yorkers are evenly split over the issue of gas drilling. And we'll take a look at this week's statewide school budget vote. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. The issue of hydraulic fracturing, the gas drilling technique that extracts oil and gas from shale by blasting it with water, sand, and chemicals, dominated the downtown Albany scene this week. The anti-fracking movement made a stand and a statement at the state capitol with a full schedule of demonstrations, rallies, and protests staged by various activists and green groups. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and files this report.
The day began on a soggy note. Most of the outdoor activities that had been planned in Lafayette Park were rained out. Anti-frackers gathered under the canopy at the Washington Avenue entrance to the Capitol, where Occupy Albany's Joanne Kathleen Farrell told onlookers fracking supporters are misinformed.
They have been lied to for so many years. They're told that if we invest all this money in creating jobs in hydraulic fracturing of rock, then we'll lose OPEC. We'll lessen the need for oil in America. And that's completely not true.
Farrell fears fracking will wreck agriculture, destroy the housing market, and collapse the economy. New York Times bestselling author Bonnie Jones Reynolds fears most people can't imagine what life would be like if hydrofracking were permitted.
They cannot conceive of the devastation.
Dutchess County legislator Joel Tyner says the facts on fracking speak volumes.
Last May, 12 months ago, Duke University came out with a study that was peer-reviewed through the National Academy of Sciences, proving that if your drinking water well is within 1 mile of where fracking is taking place, there's an 1,800% greater chance that there's going to be methane in your well.
One outdoor activity went on despite the rain. Again, Joanne Kathleen Farrell.
We marched down to the Corny Preserve, and we took a water sample, and from the river, and then we marched back. We had stopped at a few locations on the way back where we had a speak out. We had a banner drop over the highway, and then we came back and we congregated in the front of the Capitol, and we're up here in the war room now ready for a die-in.
The die-in was held to demonstrate that fracking kills people and destroys clean water. Abram Loeb founded Frack Free New York and Frack Free Nation. He says we need to move beyond what he calls dirty energy.
I was told by, I won't give the exact location, but by a local UAW president who works for GM, that the hydrogen fuel cell is ready to go. But the only thing standing in the way is the money needed to invest in infrastructure.
Colia Lafayette Clark is the Green Party United States Senate candidate for 2012. She says, although the New York City watershed would be protected against fracking, she believes the process is too dangerous to allow anywhere.
We do not need to destroy ourselves. We do not need to break the shale. We do not need to do that. Mother Earth does not like it, and she will fight back with every resource she has. and we will be no more.
Dr. Sandra Steingraber, author, biologist, cancer survivor, distinguished scholar in residence at Ithaca College, worries what will happen to gas drilling wells over time.
You know, we can ask for triple casings, quadruple casings, and so forth, but if it turns out that all cement shrinks and disintegrates sooner or later, are we not creating portals of contamination from deep down in the earth up to the surface, so that even if they're safe for 5 years, they may not be 15, 20, 30, 40, 100 years from now.
Ithaca, New York sits right on top of the Marcellus Shale. Ithaca College student Kayla Bamberger shows up at nearly every anti-fracking event. Tuesday, she came dressed as the fracking fairy.
So I like to try to incorporate some sort of visceral demonstration in with the anti-fracking movement. A lot of times it attracts attention that otherwise wouldn't be attracted to, you know, people just holding signs versus people dressed up or carrying out a certain act.
In mid-afternoon, the groups made their way up to the second floor of the Capitol for a rally, somewhat dwarfed by a bigger, louder rally on the $1 million staircase around 4:30, attended by actor-activist Mark Ruffalo and Senator Tony Avella from Queens, who used the occasion to tout Senate Bill 4220A that would ban hydrofracking.
The very fact that we would consider contaminating our water supply, because the oil and natural gas companies want to make a few bucks, and for this promise of some temporary jobs, is an absolute disgrace on state government.
The day of activism was topped off by a sold-out concert at the Egg featuring Mark Ruffalo and Melissa Leo. Acting as hosts, several musicians performed, including Joan Osborne and Natalie Merchant. Now everyone awaits the forthcoming decision from the Department of Environmental Conservation as to whether, when, and where hydrofracking might be permitted in the Empire State.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, big protest in Albany over the issue of hydraulic fracturing for natural gas. The group New Yorkers Against Fracking, headlined by Dr. Sandra Steingraber and actor Mark Ruffalo, are calling for a ban on fracking in the state. WAMC here, for its part, has been doing a series of interviews, and you've been headlining that with folks on both sides of the issue. As you sit here at this moment, what do you see coming for New York in terms of natural gas drilling?
Well, look, if there's one thing we all know about Andrew Cuomo is that he is an astute politician. You know, I think we all expected from his father that it would be, you know, this is right or this is wrong. Governor Cuomo, the present Governor Andrew Cuomo, you know that the political expediency is really at the top of the list. So if enough people get really ticked off about this, he will forego his obvious plan to allow fracking in some parts of the state, which is the Marcellus Shale, which covers a good deal of the south tier of the state and a good deal of the state, to be perfectly honest with you. The evidence to me is overwhelmingly convincing that this is not something we should do unless we really know what we're doing. This is a genie that will not be put back into the bottle. Governor Patterson, you may remember, put a moratorium on it. The commissioner, Joe Martens of DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation, has said that they're going to study it, but many of us suspect that the deal was cut from the day that Martens was appointed. So why? Well, because Andrew Cuomo wants to be president of the United States. And, you know, a good deal of what he accomplishes here, he is going to say is replicable countrywide. If he can say, look, by getting all of this gas and natural gas, I helped to solve the energy problem when I was governor of New York, and now I want to help to solve it for the nation, and you have to trust me that I can do these things. On the other hand, if New Yorkers get really ticked off about it and line up, then I think he's got a little bit of a problem. Right now, it's 50-50, right down the middle. But I think as people get more educated about it, when they realize that the possibilities are here, that their kids' drinking water is going to be compromised. And that is what a lot of people are saying from Pennsylvania and other places, that people will just not tolerate it. If that happens, you can be sure Andrew Cuomo is with them. Now, they did a big concert, a big thing. I went to cover it with Natalie Merchant. And at the very end of it, very impressively, the sage. That's the other thing you can call him now. Pete Seeger stood up on a film because he's 93 years old and couldn't come, and said, looked at the camera and said, Governor Cuomo, your father was the greatest governor the state has ever had. People know that. And if you sell out to the people with money, then all I can tell you is you will go down as the worst governor. That from Pete Seeger. Whoa.
So you mentioned the 50-50 split, Alan, with hydrofracking in the state from New Yorkers. Also in the Siena College poll, 78% supported a raise in the minimum wage, which we saw effectively die in the Senate this week. And the governor saying there's just not enough time to pass it at the end of the session, even though he supports it.
Well, look, he's a Democrat. He has to say he supports it. But as I've always told my students, and you've heard me say it 1,000 times, David, look what I do, not what I say. If he wants it, look, this guy is tremendously powerful in New York. He wants a raise in a minimum wage. He's going to get it. It's the Republicans, who many people think in the state Senate, who many people think are Cuomo's allies. After all, by vetoing the redistricting bill, Cuomo went a long way towards reassuring that the Senate Republicans would stay in the majority. And they are opposed to it, they say. But of course, it's just inarguable that people can't live on the existing minimum wage. And it puts them into poverty. And even a Democratic governor has got to know that the blowback is going to be huge on this. Would I be surprised to see some last-minute deal? Maybe not everything that the Assembly is asking for, the Democratic Assembly, I should say, is asking for. But I do think that there are some signs that the Republicans in the Senate and the governor are feeling the heat on this. And maybe some compromise will be arrived at.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartoff. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Governor Cuomo is pleased with the outcome of this week's statewide school budget vote, but teachers and school board leaders see some disturbing trends. More from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
This year's school budget vote was the first to take place after Governor Andrew Cuomo convinced the legislature to adopt the property tax cap. The governor says he's pleased that few schools attempted to override the cap and that most schools kept tax increases to a minimum and were approved by the voters. He says taxpayers, as well as state government, are tapped out.
At one point, there is no more money, and that's where we are now. The answer is not put your hand in the pocket of the taxpayer anymore, because the taxpayer doesn't have anything in his or her pocket to pay government. So that's what the tax cap did. The increases are much, much lower than they have been in past years. And I think that's the fiscal discipline imposed by the discussion of the tax cap.
Cuomo and the legislature did give schools a 4% funding increase from last year, following 3 years of cuts. The teachers' union, New York State United Teachers, reports that 96% of school budgets passed. NYSET President Richard Iannuzzi calls that a mixed blessing. He says it's good news that so many budgets were approved, but he wonders at what cost.
In order to stay below the cap, districts have had to reduce full-day kindergarten to half-day, eliminate AP courses, cut back on athletics, eliminate arts and music. Then I think that's a high price. And when the legislature and the governor put the tax cap together, they needed to think not only about controlling taxes, they needed to think about providing appropriate services. And I would challenge whether the tax cap allows school districts to provide that service.
Some schools did exercise their option to circumvent the tax cap. In the new law, districts can raise taxes above the cap, which averaged around 3% per district, if more than 60% of voters say yes. Iannuzzi, with the teachers' union, says a disturbing trend may be developing, though. He says if the preliminary voting returns hold, voters in richer schools overrode the cap when given that option, while voters in poorer schools did not. He says that could be grounds for a constitutional legal challenge. challenge to the tax cap law, because New York's constitution requires that all children in the state receive a sound basic education.
That was a major concern of ours with the structure of this tax cap, and we're going to look very closely at the results to see whether there's an argument here to challenge the tax cap in terms of issues of equity.
The New York State School Boards Association is also expressing reservations about the voting outcome. The school board's Tim Creamer says two-thirds of districts cut teaching staff, hundreds will be laid off, and 99% needed to dip into their reserve funds, which are rapidly dwindling. He says the years of cutbacks are taking their toll, and he says at some point soon, children's educations will be compromised.
That's the big question. When are the lines crossed? Have we already crossed them? We heard the Commissioner of Education speak of districts that will reach educational insolvency. And by that, he means you're going to have kids who are going to come out of high school unprepared for college or a career. They will not be able to compete with kids who go to other schools, other states, other countries.
Creamer says for some districts, that may be coming sooner than later. The school boards say it's up to Cuomo and the legislature now to follow through with the second part of property tax reform, and that's the elimination of what they say are costly state-mandated programs and regulations. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
As nine hopeful startups settle into Syracuse this week for the Start Fast Accelerator program, one team will be feeling a little more homesick. The Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney has this story of one company that traveled here all the way from Israel.
The motivation for Amir Kohan to leave his steady job working in Israel's tech sector was his 22-year-old niece. Every time she gets into a taxi cab, she has her cell phone out, ready to call her father.
This was the original trigger. Letting people feel safer and be safer on their daily routine when they're going out for a party, going in a taxi, whatever.
So Kohan dreamed up a smartphone app called Guard My Angel that will send out an alert with your location if you feel threatened.
The main thing that we would like to resolve is that you would never say, I wish I knew. If something happens to a friend of you nearby, you may want to know.
Kohan teamed up with former coworker Hagar Romach to work on the app. A version launched for Android phones in January. An iPhone version is in the works. When Romach met a StartFast mentor at a tech event in Israel and learned about the accelerator program in Syracuse this summer, she knew they had to apply. But the decision to leave their families and come here was not without hesitation. Still,
we think that when you're an entrepreneur, then you need to make these steps in order to succeed. It's not easy, it's not trivial, but we jumped into the water and sometimes it's cold, but we're doing it.
Startup accelerators like StartFast bring in fledgling tech companies and give them seed money in return for a small stake in the company. The teams also get access to mentors and free workspace, which Kohan says beats bouncing around from coffee shop back in Israel.
So it was very hard to get a full working day. And this is an opportunity. We have a desk, we have a working environment, and we'd like to make it happen faster.
Right now, the Guard My Angel app works kind of like the OnStar service in cars. Users can set a timer, and if the clock runs out before hitting I'm okay, the alert will go out. You can also send out an SOS at any time. Kohan says the messages will still go out if your phone runs out of battery or is even submerged in water. There is competition out there, but Kohan says the biggest difference with Guard My Angel is that the device won't constantly track your location, just when the alert is activated. The biggest feature they're hoping to roll out over the next 3 months is a way for the app to also notify contacts who are near your location when the alert is sent out. That feature interests mentor Elisa Miller out, but she says Kohan and Romach will have to be careful to not try and tackle too much.
Well, what they're struggling with right now, I think, is really just trying to focus the product and figure out, you know, which path is going to provide the most traction with real users. They already have a strong user base, which is great, but they're going to do more specific testing with them to figure out which angles might have more traction.
Kohan and Romach are hoping to immerse themselves this summer in that user base. They rented a house for the three-month program in the student neighborhood near Syracuse University. Just how much time they'll be able to spend in that house is to be determined. Like the other eight companies participating in StartFast, Guard My Angel is planning on putting in some pretty long days in that free workspace.
That's the Innovation Trail's Ryan Delaney. Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The Plattsburgh Public Library kicked off its summer reading program this week, and it's part of a statewide effort to get more children to read. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley.
The New York State Library is part of a consortium between most states that have pooled resources to create a summer reading program for children. New York State Deputy Commissioner for Cultural Education and Acting State Librarian Jeffrey Cannell says it's critical that reading skills be maintained.
Reading is the basic building block for everything, everything else in studies and in life. And research shows that children who are successful at reading are successful at school and then go on to further their education and careers successfully. There's a danger if a child doesn't read over the summer, he or she can lose that reading level and go back to school in September and have to play catch up. But if you read over the summer, you maintain the reading level that you left school with and perhaps even increase it, so you're ready to get to work and succeed. So it's good for that reason, and it's also good because kids, unlike the rest of the year, get to read what they want.
The Plattsburgh Public Library is joining libraries across the state in this year's program, which is targeting enrolling 1.8 million children statewide. Jeffrey Cannell explains how the program works.
Basically, there's a theme for younger readers and there's a theme for teens each year, and the state library provides a manual that gives some hints and ideas for local librarians to hang whatever programs they want to have on that theme. The theme this year for children is Dream Big, Read, and for teens it's Own the Night. So it's kind of a, you know, nocturnal theme this year. It's something different, but it's always big enough and broad enough that we can focus on it but use it any way that we need to locally.
Plattsburgh Public Library Director Stan Ransom says while the summer reading program brings children into libraries, it also broadens awareness about other services they provide.
The program helps the libraries by enabling us to reach the children whom we know will be later college students and taxpayers too. We want to be able to reach all segments of the population. We have so many different kinds of services. We have are fortunate in having a federal program which enabled us to have a public computer center and job employment center.
Jeffrey Cannell, how important is it as part of this program to get that awareness out that the library is not just a reading resource?
It's critical for the success of the community as much as critical to individual success for the library to be successful.
We also would like to respond to the interests of the community in every way we can think of, but also in technology, because people want information in so many different ways. And this is one of the things the public library reacts to.
The summer reading program was rolled out in Bethlehem, near Albany, last week. Formal program startups are scheduled in Syracuse, Buffalo, Watertown, and other cities across the state.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
That about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1220. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.